Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in the studio right now is Diane Basto. She is a candidate for the 1st Congressional District. Diane, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Glad to be here. It's a gorgeous morning.
It's a very interesting interview for me because we haven't had a chance to talk, and so it's a good opportunity for myself to get to know you as well as our listeners. So let's go ahead and kind of start with that. Who is Diane Basto?
Diane Basto is a libertarian person. I'm 67 years old. I live in Gwinn, Michigan. I have never run for office ever before, had no desire to run for office before, but I'm running a campaign with the idea of winning this time. Often libertarians work very hard to keep the libertarian message out there, but with no sincere chance of winning. People will always say, well, you know, you can't win. Well, yes, I can. And that's why I'm here.
You had mentioned Gwinn as a interesting story. You live in Gwinn. How did you end up there?
My husband and I lived in Virginia. He was vice president for student affairs at Virginia Tech, and we retired and took off in our motorhome to see the country and also to decide where we would like to stick. You know, after living in a town for a long time with visibility, it's sometimes good to just go somewhere else. So we went all the way around the country, and we would say, would we like to live here? And we would do the pros and cons, gave us something to do, driving all those miles. And we started to get it down to that we wanted a small town near a university town. A small town so you could just walk down and get coffee and the mail and so forth. Near a university town, so there was some stuff going on. There were usually restaurants and students and people we were used to. We in the Southwest, there are gorgeous places, but they had a couple of problems. Excessive heat, as far as I'm concerned. I've lived in Florida, and I'm not living in Florida anymore. Lovely, but it's just too hot. The other thing is the total lack of water. There's going to be a day that Las Vegas turns, they turn their taps on and nothing comes out and there's none left to steal. So we just said, no. We like to avoid forest fires, major forest fires, if possible, earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes across the Midwest, and that sort of thing. Well, that started to narrow it down. And then I lived downstate before, and I've always just loved the lakes. I mean, we mourn when we would drive away from the lakes. We had driven through Marquette because my husband, being from the South, didn't know all of this stuff at all, and we kept kind of coming back. And then we were out on the beach at Ocracoke on the Outer Banks and got to talking with a guy that had a house in Gwinn. And we said, well, we'd really like to find a place to park and stay to find out if that area is interesting to us. He said, well, I'll rent you my house. So that's how that happened. And by the end of 3 months there, we said, yeah, this is good. Yes, as my children point out, it gets cold and there's snow. But as I point out to my son living in Gainesville, you can dig a hole in snow and it remains a hole. If you try pushing water around, it just comes right back at you. And if you get the right clothes on and build the right house, which we did, we took a little house and added an addition and put radiant floor heat, which I did some of myself. Big windows, so if there's light outside, we'll get it inside. And we spent last winter there, and it was just delightful. Being retired, we didn't have to go out either. People point that out. Well, you don't have to go to work. I know.
How long have you lived there?
It's 2 years now. Okay. We spent all last year building this addition, and it's not quite done. We have a Tyvek house at this point. It's not quite done. But I'm campaigning, so I'm not working on the house.
Well, and that kind of brings us to the next, I guess, obvious question is, okay, so sometime during that period, you say, well, there's an opening here for Congress. I'm going to go for it. What drove you to that?
Actually, the Libertarian Party asked me if I would run in the 1st District. And I got the map out and went, oh, man, that is a big district. But I felt that I really needed to say yes. It sounds corny, but kind of a sense of duty that I really do think I could do a very good job there. I'm at the perfect point in my life to be old enough to have some wisdom and young enough to have energy. And so I said, okay, guys, but you know, I'm going to play this to win. And they're like, okay, go girl.
Did they not expect you to do that?
The last person that ran was a woman, Emily Salvette. She's wonderful. And she got 10,000 votes. And she lives in Ann Arbor and really didn't come here. And so I said, well, I live here. And so I've driven my car, I think it's about 28,000 miles now since May. And yes, I think it's entirely doable. It helps a little bit that the top of the ticket on the other two parties has not been well received, shall I put it that way? And so they've kind of left an opening, I think.
So you see the opportunity because of the current political climate and those that you're running against.
Absolutely. I will say nothing bad about my opponents. People in this district have had it with people being uncivil. So I prefer to talk about what I can do rather than what they can't. Although if we disagree on policy, I'll let you know that real fast.
You have an interesting tidbit. I don't know how much it plays into your campaign, but you have a relation to one of the candidates for president.
I do. Gary Johnson is my first cousin. His mother and my father are brother and sister. Her maiden name is Bosto. And, of course, his name for his father, so it's Johnson. I will tell you this, the Johnson campaign is not funding my campaign. Let me make that perfectly clear here. Gary is a kind, generous person, funny, you know, and very generous with me. We've stayed at his home, and, you know, he cooks for us and all that sort of thing. But he expects everybody to pull their own weight. And if I can't win this on my own, then what good am I in Congress?
Let's switch to policy.
Yes.
Okay. I'll give you first shot on what issue is one of the things driving your campaign.
The main thing is to reduce the size of the federal government, which the founders meant to be kind of a narrow band of umbrella with the states. And, of course, there's a lot of argument as to whether there needed to be a federal government in the first place. But they said, yeah, but not so much. You know, let it do what the states, glue them together a little bit. And it's become this huge, bloated, expensive, bureaucratic state of its own that just gobbles up money like crazy. I would rather see the states have the money and the power to solve state by state, and then let them put whatever consortium they need for that particular task, whether it's interstate roads or what. So that's the main thing. Over and over, I would go to Washington and have it be less and less and less federal government. That would be my goal. And that is the only way we can reduce taxes. That's the only way we can do it. Everything else is just a tweak. And we're past tweaking. I have an example, if you don't. This is quick, and I think people will find it interesting. Okay, this is called the budget explained in simple issue. Here, and what we did is it's in trillions, and I can't think in trillions. So we took eight zeros off. So that would get down to like a budget that we would talk about at home across the kitchen table. Okay, in trillions. Okay, family income of 21.7. Money the family spent 38.2. This is truth. This is numbers from. So we took in taxes 21.7, and we spent 38.2. Now, anybody that's ever contemplated the family budget sees that there's a problem there, okay? So the new debt on what I call the federal credit card was 16.5. This is a yearly budget. So that leaves an outstanding balance on the credit card of $142,000. And the total budget for cuts that other politicians talk about would amount to $385. That won't work. It's not working. And the thing, where we would notice that first is inflation. I mean, rock and roll inflation like we haven't seen before. I mean, I remember in my life when interest rates on houses were 18%, and it was bringing the economy to its knees. And if we keep doing this, I'm not a doomsayer, but it's a serious thing. The same as it would be, eventually you can't do this as a family. And we can't do it as a country.
All right, if you're looking at deeper cuts, what would you target?
I personally, okay, this is my own example. I mean, the Johnson Weld campaign has a bazillion of them, but I like to think things through for myself to make sure I really understand what I'm talking about. I would like there to be no federal Department of Transportation. They don't have any roads. They have DC. It's a problem, but they only have DC. Building the interstate system was one thing. Maintaining it is another. And in Michigan, we look around. It's not going that well. I would rather have the taxation come to the state and the responsibility for all of the roads be the state. And as state people, then we could decide where to spend it. Where is it really needed most instead of the feds? They're too far removed. And every department like that costs a lot of money, a lot of money. So I would take them down to very little or nothing at all. That is an example. It sounds extreme. It's not. It really isn't. It's not that hard to do. Another one that blows people's socks off that Gary Johnson does talk about a lot, and that is getting rid of the IRS. The IRS structure, bricks, mortar, people, chairs, lights, and all that sort of thing, is in the billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. And then we, as people, spend millions of hours complying, you know, sitting down, filling out the form. That's us doing that when we could be working on our businesses or whatever else. Huge expensive. So what we would do is collect the tax like we collect sales tax. Every time we buy something, that would be collected, and it would get sent to the state or the feds. I mean, we're still going to have a federal government. We don't hear much about that. We just do it. And as a private business owner, we collect it and we paid it. And boy, if you want to get in trouble, don't pay. Don't forward your sales tax. They're a lot more efficient than the IRS. So it isn't a hair on fire kind of argument at all. We did not always have an IRS.
So it would also include then eliminating income taxes, we understand it then.
As we know it, it would become a consumption tax, yes. It would not be on what we make. And it's not the federal government's business how we spend our money. They can say whatever 20%, whatever everybody agreed on. You know, this is not a set in stone thing. This is for people to discuss what a reasonable tax would be. But I can tell you that process would put money back in our pockets. No two ways about it. And then we get to decide how to spend it.
But for the general public, a number of people don't pay much in income taxes, but we all buy things.
Yes,
would that then put a larger burden on those who maybe don't collect so much income, but yet we all buy things?
That's something we can discuss, and that would be a worthy thing for Congress to discuss. It would give them something to do that would get us somewhere. Some say an idea is that once you got to a certain level of income, you just didn't pay at all. You know, the really poor, desperately poor, can't feed themselves, you know, and we would decide as a society where that line should be.
Okay. All right, well, let's move on to talk about education, since I know that this is in your realm. The Department of Education is one of the ones that is also bantered around, like you mentioned, on the IRS as maybe an extraneous department.
I think so.
Okay, well, you do. Why?
I do. First of all, they've only been around since Jimmy Carter. I mean, the founders did not make a Department of Education. It really ran amok with the Common Core thing, partly because it was administered and handed down in such a ham-handed way. There wasn't appropriate buy-in. I would like to see that go and leave it to the states. And then I'd like the states to move that on down to the communities, too. I think, as citizens, we expect that people coming out of high school would know certain things. We need to say what those things are. So I think the idea of being accountable is fine. But Michigan might do a better or worse job than Missouri at that. And the idea is it opens us up to more creativity, and that if people are starting to want to move to Michigan because we have better schools than Missouri, Missouri's going to say, well, let's see, what are they doing over there? So that's the thing you'll hear Gary Johnson and Bill Weld talk about, is that it puts the decision making to a level where we can just deal with it. The feds are too far away. Welfare, kind of same way. I just stumbled into the other thing that will kill you in politics. But anyhow, move it. The feds don't know us. We know us. We know who in the communities are the doers and who are the slackers. We know. And so we would deal with it that way. And we're a compassionate people. As a country, we're a compassionate people. I trust that we would come up with something a whole lot better than we're doing now, and for a whole lot less money.
Before I move on, did you want to expand on your allusion there to welfare?
No, why did I bring it up in the first? Okay. Well, I think the compassion thing is what we can count on. I mean, libertarians sound like we are not compassionate because we talk dollars and cents all the time. Well, that's not true. I call myself kind of a bleeding heart libertarian. I do care about what happens to my fellow man. In Gwynn, I mean, it's not a well-off community, and I see all the time the way they take care of each other. It's very quiet. Somebody with nothing shares, I mean, literally will take their leftovers next door. So I trust in the American people to figure out a better way to do that.
In the Upper Peninsula, we have a very large population of veterans.
Yes,
a lot of people who depend on the VA system as well, which has had its difficulties recently, especially. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it and maybe some ideas of how you would improve the situation.
Well, first of all, on my card that I hand out as I'm going around, remind me where I was going with that, because I have to tell you a quick story. When I campaign and I hand my stuff, it's kind of embarrassing because I haven't done it before. It's kind of pushy. And people don't really know the difference between Congress and the legislature. You know, the House of Representatives, they're like, oh, you're going to Lansing? No. So what I started with is to say, okay, I want to be in the House of Representatives. And because of me being me with a little bit of a smart mouth, I started to say, I want to go to Washington. I want to be a slime ball in Washington. I want to pad my pockets and pretend I never met you. And that makes them laugh, but at least they know I'm going to Washington. And actually, it starts a lot of, and one poor young woman goes, oh, and I said, I was just teasing. I was just really, really, I want to go there and do a good job.
You might have thought, oh, I met my first honest politician.
I know. And we get a lot of laughs over that. Well, at least you're honest about it. And I said, yeah.
Well, I was asking about veterans.
Okay, thank you. On the back of my card here that has pictures of me and so forth, I'll read you what it says, okay? And veterans is very near the top. I want to end the deadly shredding of our society brought on by the war on drugs. I want to insist that Congress tells you how it spends your money. Transparency is everything to libertarians. Stand up for your right to privacy in your own lives. And I want to stand up for veterans. Okay, veterans right at the top. When I say stand up for, everybody says that. One fellow in Marquette said, I swore my oath. I did my 10 years, and then he did another 10 years. I swore my oath. And then when I got done, my government said to me, oh, you know that pension that we promised you? Well, it's not going to be quite that much. Well, people don't like that, and I think our government needs to stop lying. If you make a promise, you keep the promise. If you can't make the promise in the future, stop making the promise. The VA needs to be open to some fresh air, as in free market. I try not to use jargon for how that might be. I'd like to see veterans be able to go to whatever hospital would suit them best and take care of their needs best. With Congress telling the VA what to do, I mean, even if they knew what to do, and they might, they can't. They're so hobbled by regulations and so forth. So that's, and then there are just some criminals there, you know. I like to believe in the best of people first, but recognize that sometimes people just aren't very good and really shouldn't be in that job. I'm not impressed with how the military deals with its active service people either. My beloved son-in-law is a police officer in Blacksburg, Virginia. I don't know whether he'll appreciate me saying that or not, but he's a great guy. But he was also deployed in Afghanistan about 3 years ago, and he came home with an injury. And they put him up, almost incarcerated him. It wasn't the intention, but he couldn't leave Fort Myer in Washington until he got his leg fixed. And he couldn't even go home to Blacksburg. And my daughter, he was staying in essence a barracks, so my daughter couldn't come and see him. And it was weeks, and he was still being paid combat pay. Now, out in the real world, that should have gotten handled, you know, within days of his coming home, and he could have gone on. The police department was waiting for him to come back and, you know, pick up his role again. So that was the most close-up example of just pitiful management that would never be accepted in the private sector.
I'm going to run out of time before I can get much further because this goes by fast. I do want to ask you, though, because of the there's a lot of discussion. You'll have a vote on there if you're sent to Washington. On what to do with refugees coming over, and when Michigan is one of the main states that they're coming to, refugees from the war-torn Middle East, and whether or not we should be allowing them in, screening them strictly, or letting them in with, you know, very little restrictions.
Right. I'm going to go to that. Give me 3 minutes at the end. Would you give me 3 minutes?
Start now.
Well, no, let me answer that. My grandfather, Gary's of my grandfather, came from Ukraine as an immigrant. I mean, am I going to say, well, that was cool then, but it's not cool now? I'm a compassionate person. We need to do as much for those people as we possibly can.
You can expand further than that.
Well, well, again, it gets down to communities. Let's not tell people what to do, but communities, come on, let's stand up. If you have a room with a bathroom that you could spare, these are families that have no place to go whatsoever. We need to vet them. We need to know who they are, but we need to take good care of them while they're being vetted. We can't just put them out in some field and throw food at them. I mean, we really need to be nice about this. Okay. Let me tell you why I want to go to Congress.
Okay.
Right now, there's been, well, right now and for a long time, there's a 9% approval rating in Congress. It doesn't matter whether the Democrats are in charge or the Republicans are in charge. It still stays at 9%. I submit that we need to send some different people there. I am a fiscal conservative and a socially accepting person. I will work with anybody that is honorable. So if I go there and I do that and I work really hard at it, I think that I might be able to bring it to 10. But if the other honorable people that are there, and I know there are, the people that are there for a sense of duty, all the same reasons I want to go, if I find them and they find me and I don't have a party telling me not to get along with them, well, you know what? We could do some stuff you'd like to watch on C-SPAN. We could do some real good. It could be a game changer. And with a president in the White House that has that same attitude, I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican. Come on, let's do some work. Let's get together. He was a Republican when he was 2-term governor of New Mexico. His running mate, Bill Weld, was a Republican when he went to be governor of Massachusetts. Both of them left their states with balanced budgets. They were elected in overwhelmingly Democratic states, and they managed to get reelected in a landslide. I mean, that nobody else can tell you a history like that. Nobody that we've ever had in history. They did it by just saying, I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, let's get this taken care of. And in the meantime, I'll use my powers as the governor to push this along. Right now, the president has more powers than it really should in our three-part government, but it happened because Congress gridlocked. So the president, whichever president, okay, had to do some things just to get some things done, because the Republicans and Democrats are like two stags in the woods. They have locked horns. They can't get out of that mortal combat even if they want to. And so I'd like to be the one that says, okay, chill. Let me see if I can kind of pull you guys apart and let's get back to work. That would be my role.
Diane, thank you so much for coming on the program. If somebody wants to find out more about your campaign, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can go on my website, which is Diane Bostow for Congress. If they wanted to drop a little money on me, I wouldn't complain either. And then also on Facebook, elect Diane Bostow. I will let them in on my Facebook.
Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.